This is Desiree Scales with Business Radio X, the High Velocity Show. And how you doing, Kevin?
I am doing great. It's been beautiful weather. I love the cold weather. Just playing a lot of tennis. My team's going to the playoffs again.
Oh, so my gosh, excited. We are too.
Awesome.
Our doubles team.
Same here. So
excellent. Very good. Well, we're like a high C. What are you?
We're high C also.
Really?
We're C2. So.
Awesome. Yeah, we're about C3, I think. So, well, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Good
to
luck.
You too.
It'll be a big weekend. So, I don't know. You guys can probably play tennis right now in Chicago. We've got Sean McGinnis from Sears with us today. He is the head of marketing for Sears Parts Direct. And, you know, I've known Sean quite a while from Twitter. How are you, Sean?
I'm good, Desiree. It's definitely not tennis season up here. It was freezing temperatures overnight.
Oh, wow.
30s. Yeah.
Yeah, I was out yesterday. I was playing a singles match because I throw that into Kevin once in a while.
You do it all.
Yeah. And it was a balmy 65, 70 degrees last night. But
jealous.
Yeah, I used to be on the tennis team in where you work, Hoffman Estates High School. I used to be on their tennis team.
That's so funny because I played all through high school and then played in college again at Elmhurst College back in the 80s,
right?
A long time ago.
Yeah. That was about my time back there too. But well, thank you so much and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Sure.
Great to speak with you.
Yeah, I know. We've been kind of following each other around with Twitter and now on Facebook. You know, it's great to finally speak to you in real life, even though I know you're in Chicago and I'm here in the studio in Atlanta, but it's great to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's amazing how that happens, isn't it?
I know.
Wind up connecting and over time starting to get to know someone, but you haven't actually had a chance to chat with them.
Exactly. So tell us a little bit about Sears Parts Direct. Exactly what does that division do for Sears?
Sure. So we're part of the Home Services Group. So most people are familiar with Sears Home Services in the context of an appliance needing repair,
mm-hmm.
where they would call a phone number like 1-800-4-MY-LIFE or something like that, and we would roll a blue truck with a repair technician and show up at your home and fix the appliance for you. That's the context that most people have any familiarity with home services. Sears has access to 7 million different parts that allow those people to do their jobs. And
wow.
So 15 years ago, some bright executive decided that it might be a good decision to offer those parts available at retail to the DIY community as well. And so Sears Parts Direct, we're the yin to the home repair team's yang.
Wow. And the cool thing is you guys allow people, consumers like myself, to order parts online and it makes my life so much easier because, you know, we have a refrigerator and it needs filters, and I can actually get my orders automated through Sears Parts Direct and have those filters shipped to me, you know, every few months. It's great.
Yeah, it's a great program. The water filter subscription program has been an incredible success for us.
Yeah.
And I wish I could lay claim to it, but I came in right in the middle of that. So.
That's right. Yep.
Some bright young mind put that in motion a while ago. It's been really successful for us.
Well, and it works too, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So tell us, how did you get to where you're at? You know, I know you're doing several different things. You had your own company for a while, and also you're now an adjunct professor at Elmhurst. How did you get where you're at?
Well, if you're asking about this specific mm-hmm. role, the irony is that I got here from my old high school tennis doubles partner.
Wow.
So a really good friend of mine that we literally were conference champs back in the day at St. Ed's High School in Elgin, Illinois, and
uh-huh.
he had been at Sears for 23 years. And maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I had started exploring opportunities because the company that I was working for was being sold off.
Uh-huh.
It was a division within Thomson Reuters. I spent 15 years there.
That's right.
And when that happened, I just started to sort of explore the market and start turbocharging my network and see what was available. And he and I, you know, had a couple of conversations. I may have applied for a few things back in the day, never really heard back. And when I launched my own business January this year,
mm-hmm.
We talked again. And in between then and when I started here at Sirius, I think he had seen some role and forwarded it over to me and asked if I might be interested, and it turned out that that was not a great fit. And lo and behold, a couple weeks later, I found this job, just sitting on the right rail of my LinkedIn profile. You know, I'm on LinkedIn every single day.
Yeah.
To whether I'm recruiting people or connecting with people or, you know, consuming content. And there it was, staring me in the face. And it just looked like a really interesting job title. And I clicked through to it, and the description got better and better. And I sent it along, and within 2 or 3 weeks, I was in the role I'm at today at Sirius Parts Direct. So,
wow, that's great.
Serendipity smiles, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the fact that you were paying attention and monitoring your channels, like, you know, a lot of people need to do, and you just saw it on LinkedIn. I've got your LinkedIn open in front of me, as a matter of fact. So,
you know, I got my last two roles directly through LinkedIn. I know that there are people who don't believe in the power of that as a networking device, but yeah. I'm a huge testament to what can happen with it.
Oh, absolutely. LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. I mean, I know that, you know, we've found a lot of folks for our company through Facebook, for instance, or Twitter, or just asking around. There's a book out called Your Network is Your Net Worth, and it's by Porter Gale. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. And she talks about, you know, maximizing your network.
Yep.
And letting people know exactly what you're doing and what you're looking for. And you just never know, you know, who's going to know who and help you. So that's great. That's a great story.
Yeah, it's so important to let people know what you do. I know so many people who think that they've done that, and they really haven't done a very clear job of it, sort of crystallizing exactly what you do and what type of work you're looking for, whether that be on a project basis or what your business does. You know, we take for granted every day because we live in that world.
Yeah.
The things that we think we know are true, or the things that we think, the ways that other people perceive us.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't tell them, I found that to be really a useful piece of advice. So I'm going to go pick that book up. I'm familiar with her work. I just haven't had a chance to read that book yet.
Yep. She formerly and VP of marketing of Virgin, I believe. So she's got a lot of interesting ideas in there. But okay, so now, you know, Sirius Parts Direct, I'm a consumer and I use the site. But I noticed you guys do not have a strong social media presence.
Right.
So let's talk about that. What are you going to do, Mr. Ringes?
Yeah, I think, ironically, I think that's one of the reasons that I was hired into this role, is to expand our footprint and social and community and SEO and content, right?
Right.
My background is not strong as an e-commerce person, but we already have very, very capable hands sort of guiding us in the e-commerce space. But we definitely are moving in that direction.
Right.
But as of today, we don't have a Facebook presence at all. The Twitter account was something I had to actually reclaim actively through Twitter. It took several weeks of me sort of wrangling and going through the right process and making sure that I was talking to the right people, because it was an account that we'd created 3 or 4 years ago. I think there were 3 tweets on it and 9 followers, and it was sitting there laying dormant. So it's definitely part of our plan. You know, I think the interesting thing is, you know, my role as sort of the head of marketing is to think about the very traditional sort of marketing funnel, right? If you think about catching people when they're just becoming aware of the fact that they may have a need, or developing a further interest in purchasing a product or purchasing from your company, you know, sort of the AIDA, right? Awareness, interest, decision, and action. Very classic marketing or sales funnel.
Right.
The thing about parts in particular is we have a very short sales cycle. When you need a part to repair something from for one of your appliances, you need it.
Yeah.
You need it, like, right now.
Right.
You know? So there's definitely, I think, there's a branding play and an opportunity for us to move up the funnel and become more aware and gather some sort of mind share, so that when people realize they have that need, that they know that we exist. But we still have to do a very good job of being present when that sudden urgent need manifests itself. And so there's always going to be a place for paid search, and there's always going to be a place for us to be doing display. And but I think social has a really – we've got a great opportunity, because one of the things that I think is very interesting about this business is we're not just a small-time parts warehouse. We have access to all of the data that sits across the larger Sears organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think about the implications of that for a minute as a marketer. I mean, we know what appliances you've bought from us.
Yeah.
So from a segmentation perspective, we should be able to pull that data and talk to you at one-to-one and
right.
not just one-to-many. We know, because we do millions and millions of service calls every year, we know the likelihood of any individual appliance to fail. If it's going to fail, what are the things that might go wrong with it? What the parts are you'd need to actually complete that fix, and what the difficulty of that fix may be for the average consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So that data is amazingly powerful if we can tap into it and get it out there into our customers' hands in the right way. And so that's one of the things we're definitely focused on.
So do you think Facebook is probably going to be a very important play in your tool chest, you know?
Yeah, I think what we're working on now is content in general,
right.
And I think that content has lots of places where it can live. I think Facebook's mm-hmm. going to be an amazing place for us, you know, a year and a half from now. Twitter as well, LinkedIn,
yeah.
Probably less so, mm-hmm. but Google+, I think there's definitely an opportunity for us to create communities and to leverage our customers, too. You know, we do business with lots and lots and lots of people, and to
yeah.
have them come back in and add a lot of sort of user-generated content and decision support mechanisms inside of our site. So to build a site that's a lot more useful, both as a repair specialist, a repair expert, but also as just a pure consumer. So if we put in online, for example, the ability to rate the difficulty of a repair or to add comments on how difficult that repair was, ingesting videos that we shoot, allowing our customers to upload their own videos
yes.
Yeah. You know, there's so many directions you can take this.
It's great.
I mean, it's really a mecca from a DIY perspective in terms of the opportunity here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can even go the Pinterest route with this.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Yep.
So there's a lot of opportunity there. That's going to be fun to watch you kind of, you know, figure that out and put your roadmap together, you know, especially as somebody who uses the service. I got to tell you, this is how I found out about the service. We moved into our new home, and we had a refrigerator, you know, that needs filters. And we mm-hmm. went into Sears, and I kept going back, you know, and getting the filters. And they're like, hey, you know you can get this online, right? I'm like, really? I wish I would have known, you know. And that's how I ended up connecting with the Parts Direct online automated shipping. It was
that's great because that's exactly
thing.
What they're supposed to do.
Right?
Someone, your person did their job.
Yes,
so I
absolutely.
Thank them for that. That's exact. We've got incentives in place to ask them to do that.
Yeah.
And it's a very useful service, but it's one. You know, it's water filters are a great part of our business, but there's so much more. You
repair
know?
And
the
yeah.
things you can do by yourself today.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to have access to the knowledge base to do those things
right.
10 years ago. Yeah, 5 years ago. I mean, you couldn't do it.
No.
You had to be an expert or you had to be whatever. That's the power of the web.
Yeah, exactly. So what are some of the other challenges that you face in marketing and e-commerce business? And I know a lot of this is B2C, and that's a whole different market. We've had a lot of B2B folks on lately, so it's refreshing to hear from the B2C side.
Yeah, I think the thing that's and this is sort of new to me too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a strong B2C background, and I didn't have a big strong retail background. But as I'm digging in and really starting to appreciate the challenges that I face every day, or that we face as a company, the biggest one right now is this concept of attribution. So, if you're spending a lot of money in a variety of different marketing channels, even with a very quick purchase cycle, which we do have at Parts Direct, there's a chance that you might have been exposed to a whole variety of different marketing messages.
Mm-hmm.
You could have run a search and clicked on a PPC ad. You could have run another search and clicked on an organic result. You could have gotten an email from us. You could have seen a retargeting display ad. And as we start to venture forth into social, there's all those other implications there. So the question is, if within a couple of day period, given that short sales cycle, you are exposed to five different pieces of marketing content, which one of those deserves the most credit or all of the credit? Is it the first one the thing that got you thinking about the fact that you ought to order that water filter, mm-hmm. or is it the last one? Very traditionally, marketers have the tools that we use allow us, or don't allow us, but they force you to give 100% of the credit to that last marketing message. And the thing that I'm really interested in is finding ways to better appreciate the value that each one of those marketing channels is actually driving for us inside of our marketing mix.
So
it's a tough challenge.
Well, let me ask you this question. You know, a lot of companies are using Twitter as a customer service tool, mm-hmm. where basically people can go on Twitter and ask questions. Oh, I'm missing this part, or how do I install this, or that type of thing. Do you see that coming down your roadmap in the future?
I do. Mm-hmm. I think there's a great opportunity for us. You know, one of the things that is brilliant about working at Sears is the scale of the place, right? So we have hundreds of people on the phones that are truly experts at what they do, and they know this business very well. And we have access to our service technicians. We have a whole bank of some of the best service technicians that ever worked in the field working for us, mm-hmm. answering questions. So when you post a question online, for example, you know, we do have a very robust sort of a forum where you can ask questions and those will get answered by experts. It could be that we start tapping into those people to utilize their expertise in these social channels as well and encourage that back and forth and take something that used to happen within a forum or within something that we controlled on our website and distribute it, put it out in the ether that way. I think that's a great use case.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
You know, LinkedIn is a great example. Last night I was asking for some help because I know that I had just gotten an email from LinkedIn offering me a 30-day upgrade to premium. I
yep.
couldn't find it. I put it out on Twitter, and literally they activated it immediately for me, uh-huh. and sent me a confirmation email instead of resending me the email.
Oh, wow. That's good customer service right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my perception of them went up about tenfold. You know,
yeah.
Like, wow. That's
absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely. They saved you some steps.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. So, you know, taking a look at your LinkedIn profile, you've got some slides here and some presentations. You talk about link building and some SEO and, you know, talking about SEO and related topics, any observations on the state of SEO, maybe where it's been and where it's going?
Yeah, I think that I guess my experience, so I led an SEO team in a former life. I had 37 SEO consultants that reported to me, and, mm-hmm. and we touched a lot of websites and for our B2B customers. And the thing that I keep seeing from I see a lot of people make mistakes, and when they make mistakes, it's usually based on them and their desire to outwit Google.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
It's this concept of if something is good for you or good for your website, then more is always better, right? And so if keywords are good, then more keywords are always better. Let's just go stuff this keyword. I want this page to rank for the term, you know, water filter subscription. I'm going to go put the words water filter subscription 100 times on my page. That's
right.
Just the wrong answer.
Right.
It always has been.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that most people they eventually come around to the notion that they need to stop worrying about what Google's doing and start worrying about their customers.
Yeah.
And it's really about sort of if you build things in the right way and you do some of the right things and you create and participate in a community, rankings happen by themselves in many ways. You can certainly do what you want to do to sort of focus that down and get really specific and targeted about it. But most people make the mistake of trying to overdo it. If they would just let it become naturally, mm-hmm. they'll be in pretty good shape.
Right. So, you know, we talk about organic and we talk about pay-per-click. Does your division participate in both? Or?
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have you know, one of the things about pay-per-click is that it's, you know, when you are in that buying mode, you're much more likely to click on a paid ad than you otherwise would be.
Right.
And so it's when you're sort of very specifically looking for a type of part, or if you're searching for something like Whirlpool appliance parts, we absolutely want to be there. And so we spend a lot of money and we do the best we can to try to be there at the bottom of the funnel when customers are ready to fall out. You know, I'm in a buying mode. I know I need this part. I'm going to go run a search and click on an ad, and I'm going to go buy the part.
Right.
That's in sort of comparison shopping mode or what have you. But there's also a need to catch them when they're in research mode, and that was sort of the the point of the SEO is when you're more likely to run a search for repair symptoms, or mm-hmm. My dishwasher is leaking. How do I fix a leaky dishwasher? Phrases like that are much better suited for how-to content, and we're really right in the middle of a very large effort to put some world-class how-to content on our website. So if you go there today, you'll find it under the pull it up. But it's we're tapping into our technicians mm-hmm. In a more and more meaningful way to get them to sort of vet the content. We're working with our editorial staff, and they're creating it with us in partnership. So if you go to the homepage right above the search box, there's manuals and repair help. And if you click that button in the middle box, it says repair help, repair and care tips.
I gotcha.
There's lots and lots of new content that we're in the process of creating, and we're going to be creating repair videos and curating things from around the web and making it all available on our site.
Right. So talk about video. Why do you think video is so powerful?
Oh my gosh! Is there any better way to communicate? Like, I mean, just use these how-to. Think of how-to for a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, you can write a 4,000-word how-to blog post with lots of images and snapshots, but isn't it just as easy to to watch a video?
Yeah.
Maybe easier. I know that. And the other issue is, I have three young children. I have three boys from the ages of 7 to 11, and I swear to you, I think that YouTube is their search engine.
Yeah. Exactly.
All day, every day, they sit, and if they want to know how to play a video game, they want to know how to find a cheat code, they want to know how to do X or Y or Z, they go to YouTube.
Yeah.
And invariably, someone has created a video about how to do that thing, and they've uploaded it.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time.
Yep.
It's amazing to me. And so that's an area where we've got 130 or so YouTube videos in our channel today.
Right.
We're in the process of redeveloping those with our current logo. I mean, we went through a rebranding not long ago.
Yeah.
But we're definitely going to be pushing harder and harder on the video side because we see that there's a ton of opportunity there.
So I take it, I mean, Sears has been around, I think, as long as I've been, longer than I've been alive. And living in Chicago, you couldn't get away from Sears. And I mean, my parents, live here in Atlanta, and they still, Sears, if they want the carpets clean, they call Sears, et cetera, et cetera. It's such a historical brand. What are you doing to bring that feel? I know you guys are modernizing Sears, and I know the branding has changed, but how do you keep that feel of such a historical company?
I wish I knew. That's a side of the business I don't have any impact on or visibility to. They're doing their thing. I tell you what I do love. I love the ads.
Yeah.
The things that they're doing with some of the ads, if you've seen them lately, are just amazing. The new Die Hard ad with the zombies, just a killer. I mean, I laughed so hard. It was just classic. Even though you could sort of see it coming, the payoff was just brilliant.
Right. That's great. So,
I'm a big fan of the work that they're doing there. I'm no expert at it, that's for sure, in terms of TV and advertising. But
gotcha.
It seems like that they're really working hard on that side of the business.
Right. So, let's talk a little bit more about the social media end of things. There's such thing as called Google authorship, and you talk about that. Tell us more about Google authorship. What does that mean?
Yeah, so when you run a search on Google these days, every now and then you'll stumble across a result that's got an image to the left of it. You'll see a snapshot or a headshot of the author of that of that content. Authorship is the route by which you claim authorship or dominion. You are the creator of a specific piece of content. It happens within the Google system. So it happens by you placing a snippet of code on your website and connecting your website or the individual pages within your website back to your Google Plus page.
Mm-hmm.
Authors are people. They are not brands. They are not companies. And so you have to be a person. It has to be a personal Google Plus page. And the headshot that you use within your Google Plus page has to be a recognizable shot of a person. It can't be a person, like a brand. You can't have your logo.
Right.
So those are the sort of the basic rules. But essentially, it means today, it really means little more than the fact that that image shows up along with a few other tidbits of data. So if you were to run a search where my profile would show up, if I had created a piece of content, it would tell you how many people that I'm connected with on Google+. It helps you find other content that I have created because it's now got a record of that, the things that I've all tied up there. And you can do this for properties that you own, and you can also do it for other properties that maybe you've guest posted on or written a guest article on another blog or another publication as well. It's just a really it's a two- or three-step process. If you search for Google authorship, that's the foundation of it. But it's also the beginnings mm-hmm. of a broader movement at the end of which will be Google taking into account the authority of that of an individual author as a ranking signal. So right now, primarily the main ranking signals that Google considers are things along the lines of, is this content trustworthy? Does it sit on a domain that we know and like and trust and we have some history with and that lots of other places have linked to? And is it relevant about the search, the query that this person just ran? If I'm running a search for yellow ribbons, does this have the keyword yellow ribbons in the content? Is there an image of a yellow ribbon on this page?
Mm-hmm.
Lots
mm-hmm.
of other factors like that. Eventually, they'll look at the person who wrote that and say, is this person an authority on yellow ribbons? Do they write about it often and frequently? And when they do other people tend to share that? So they're starting to get to the point where they're digging a layer deeper and looking beyond just the domain and starting to look at the fact that domains don't necessarily create content, but people create content.
So, you know, and talking about people in search, talk to us a little bit about social search and how that's going to affect the future of business to consumer, you know, for Sears Parts Direct.
Yeah, I think as I think about it, that's a great question, by the way. I think when I think about social search, there's two ways to look at it. There's social search and there's search in social. So when
right.
So I think it's important to clarify terms there. And I'm not sure that they've been fully clarified by the market either, by the way.
Yeah, I think this is the first time.
It's a lot of confusion. I mean, a lot of people think about, you know, when you talk about social search, some mm-hmm. people think about, oh, I'm talking about the searching that can happen on Facebook.
Right.
Or searching
or
that
Twitter.
Happens on Twitter.
Right.
And certainly that's a huge and growing market. I mean, that's why...
It is.
Facebook, you know, made the changes they did to allow you to search their data and to search the graph.
Mm-hmm.
But the other way to look at it and the more immediate way to look at it is the way that social signals are influencing existing search results on Google and on Bing, and the way that those social signals may be integrated within the search results themselves, even if they don't maybe influence those results, the way that Facebook results are completely integrated within Bing, for example, or the way that Google Plus is integrated in Google. I mean,
right.
that's another great example. But I think the answer to the question is both are on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
Both are certainly on the ascent in terms of importance, in terms of frequency, in terms of the way that we interact with them every day. And so it's important to pay attention to those things, to understand, for example, the reason why a plus one of a piece of content is strongly correlated with high rankings in that content. It's not necessarily because of the plus one itself today, although that may be the case in the future. The reason why it's so strongly correlated, actually, if you go, and it is the number two correlation factor right now, so if you go to Moz.com and search for ranking factors,
mm-hmm.
you'll stumble into their latest annual search ranking factor study where they looked at all of the various things that they look at. And the number two factor was the number of plus ones that a piece of content receives.
Wow.
And the reason is because that when that content gets plus one via Google Plus, essentially what happens is that content gets shared by the person who plus one'd it on their Google Plus page. And their Google Plus page has a distinct URL. It is a separate sort of little domain all by itself. And there's that link then counts from an inbound link perspective. It passes link value from that person's plus one back to the page that got shared. And so those factors are very strongly correlated with higher rankings.
All right. So you talked a lot about plus one and Google Plus, and I have a problem with Google Plus. I do, because I think that it's made up of a lot of technology people. I don't quite think it's caught on yet with the average consumer. That's going to be an interesting battle for, I think, a lot of companies to overcome. I mean, honestly, if I asked a lot of my clients if they plussed one something, I think that they would look at me and they'd go, huh, what do you mean? So how are you going to overcome that?
I think it's an interesting conundrum, but I think that there's really no way to overcome it. It's just you either decide that it's important enough to play that game or you don't.
Right.
And
that's a good point.
If rankings are important to you and being number one is more important than being number two, you're going to do everything you can. That's the thing about search, right?
Yeah.
Is SEO is very much a zero-sum game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be perfect. I just need to be a little faster than you. I'm outrunning the bear,
right.
You know?
Right.
And so if the concept of, quote-unquote, more optimization means that I'm going to go be on plus one, then that's going to drive more and more brands into finding ways to work collaboratively with Google in Google Plus, or, you know, and finding ways to be a strong brand participant, finding ways to build a robust community. I mean, there's certainly a lot of opportunities there. You know, you can build communities, you can build your brand page. There's a lot of options there that are there to some extent in the other places as well, the other social channels. But I think Google's built a really interesting infrastructure. I agree with you, by the way. I think that it is very much a sort of, you know, all the marketing geeks and tech nerds like myself and you and others we're there, you know, we use it to varying degrees of success.
Right.
I don't use it as often as I should, but I can assure you as we start rolling social channels out within the Parts Direct world, we'll definitely have a presence there.
So, Sean, you just called me a nerd. Let me tell people exactly what you've been doing lately on Facebook at your job, and we're going to see who's the bigger nerd, okay?
Yeah, there you go. I definitely, I proudly stake a claim for my nerdery.
This is a man, you know, listeners, that is taking pictures of himself at his new desk at Sears and taking pictures of his socks and shoes with his feet up on his desk doing various things.
So, in front of my whiteboard.
Yeah, in front of your whiteboard or, you know.
It's usually the same pose. It's usually, hey, I'm at work. It's 6:30 in the morning.
Right.
What are you up to? Here's
I'm drinking
my
coffee.
For the day. Yeah, here's my coffee. And then I started to get creative and say, this sock picture brought to you by today's, you know, word of the day, attribution.
That's right.
Hey, Google Plus or something.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's hilarious because
it
gave
you certainly
a
generate a lot of comments, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes, you did. You did. And I think, has anyone sent you socks yet?
Yeah, Ted Rubin sent me a pair.
That's
my buddy
awesome.
Ted. Absolutely. And it's so funny. Someone today posted on my Facebook page, you should go buy these. So I did. It was something at Art of Manliness or something like that, or Touch of Modern, I think it was.
Five
new pairs of socks for $40 coming my way.
So there you go. I think a lot of people with social media, there are opportunities like that to create memorable, kind of trademarkable, things that make people remember you. Like with Bella Web Design, we've got the peacock. I mean, people send it. It's in our logo and in our branding, and I have friends who will see a pair of shoes that have a peacock on it or a pillow, and they'll send me a picture on Facebook.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's awesome that we can do things like that and that you thought that up.
It's like a personal brand attribute,
right?
Right? I mean,
exactly.
It's the way that Joe Polizzi always wears his orange shirts.
And, yeah.
You know, everyone's got their own sort of, not everyone, but certainly
yeah,
plenty
right.
do. I mean, Chuck Heeman was known for his Argyle sweaters for the longest time. I mean,
that's right.
Yep. It's interesting.
It is. So, you know, give me a couple things that you feel that B2C companies could do better or improve with their, you know, online marketing. What are a couple of suggestions you can give our audience?
Oh, my gosh. that's so situationally dependent.
Yeah.
It really depends. The mistakes that I see are usually very basic. You know, if you're a small business and you haven't thought through or sat down and talked about SEO, for example, I think that beginning any web development effort with a content strategy in mind and fully developed and formed is really, really important. oftentimes that gets weighted, that gets held to the end of the process. Oh, we built our website. Hey, it's not performing. Who do we call? You know,
that's exactly right.
Call the SEO Ghostbusters and see what they can do for you.
Right.
I think everything has to follow in order. I see a lot of people, and small business in particular, leaving that step out, and maybe that's just because I come from the SEO world, and so I've got that hat on, and I'm very sort of highly attuned to the fact that it's usually a misplaced and out-of-order step. And even with the other issue is the bigger businesses, from the larger the company, the more likely that there are, you know, take a step back. So from an SEO perspective, there's three major elements as I look at them. There's the on-site factors, you know, what content is on your page and what have you.
Right.
There's off-site things like how many people and how many other sites link to you and the importance of those sites and the relevancy of those sites. But then there's this technical setup piece, which is the third leg of the stool. And the bigger the company, like Sears, the more likely it is to have challenges with that, because your web development team isn't just building a website. They're also communicating with all these archaic databases from that were built 30 or 40 years ago. And so they're interfacing every day with IT services that have been built over through the years. And it's a really big challenge for big businesses to do that consistently with SEO in mind. It's there are challenges that are presented that the average small business never faces.
Right.
If you're building a small business website in WordPress, for example, those all those things are pretty much handled for you.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about it. Big companies have those challenges every single day.
Wow. That's very interesting insight. You've got some really great ideas. I love following you. Where can everybody find you online?
Oh, my gosh. Where can't they find me? on Twitter, my handle is Sean McGinnis, which is spelled S-E-A-N-M-C-G-I-N-N-I-S. There's that. If you run a search for my name, if you just run a search for that, you will find me most of the places you'd ever want to find me. There's my LinkedIn profile. I'm happy to accept connections on Facebook, even if we don't know each other, probably. I blog a little bit on SeanMcGinnis.me.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since I've done that. I blog a little bit more on 312 Digital, which was the name of my company when I was on my own from January through May of this year.
Right.
That started out as my blog, and then I sort of migrated it to this business site where we were doing web development and SEO consulting and reputation management consulting, and did a lot of trainings on that brand as well. The vision was to do a lot more sort of full-day in-depth training for a variety of different digital marketing disciplines.
Right.
May pick that up one day when I go into semi-retirement. But those are the main places. And then Sears Parts Direct. I mean, certainly to the degree we do have social channels, you know, follow the brand on Twitter, and we'll alert you when we launch our Facebook page there, and we'll alert you when we launch our Google Plus page there.
That's great. So I should be calling you Professor McGinnis. I forgot.
Yeah, tonight is day one. So
that is.
I accepted an adjunct professorship. I'm teaching a social media class to a small group of MBA students at my alma mater, which is Elmhurst College, and that's 4 hours a night, one night a week for the next 8 weeks, starting tonight. So every Tuesday you'll find me there.
That must feel really good to be teaching at your alma mater. That's a great honor for you. So... that's
really
great.
Looking forward to getting that started. I'm scared out of my mind, but I think it's going to be a good time.
It's a lot of work, you know, definitely.
Yeah, it really is.
A lot
more
of
than
work.
I thought. More than I thought.
But, you know, good luck with that, and
thanks.
I'll be watching the Facebook page, and I can't wait to see your first comments. You going to wear some funky socks?
Yeah, not today. Today I'm all professional, but maybe next week. I'll get a full flavor.
Good. All right, Sean, I know you're busy, and thank you so much for your time today. It was great to have you on with us, and I hope to have you on again in the future.
Thanks for having me, Desiree. It was great to meet you, and say hello to everyone for me, and well, next time you're up, bring your tennis racket.
Absolutely, Sean. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
This is Desiree Scales with the High Velocity Show, Business Radio X. Have a great week.